and otherwise haven't been up here. Thank you for having me. I'm speaking this morning on a topic that we need to look at a little bit more often, and it's things have changed. Let me give you a little background on why I do this. Back when, many years ago, when I was at Oklahoma Christian University, my primary professor, who is still an elder of the church in Oklahoma City, he would always work into the lectures how every day, as we became better communicators, we became more obligated to use it for the Lord's service. Well, you hear that every day for about 2 years, it begins to stick, all right? And so years later, I put together a one-hour presentation about television and children, which is what we'll look at this afternoon, an updated version of that, and started presenting it in different places. Later on, I went to a class about putting presentations together, and I had expanded to 3 hours, and so I thought, I need to share this. It's changed a lot. I quit doing this presentation for 5 years, up until a year ago, because of work responsibilities, and then started back. And when I started back, I realized the world had changed. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I wasn't talking about social media. It was a non-issue. I mentioned it in passing, but it wasn't a big deal. Well, man, it's everything now, all right? And this terminology that I'm using here represents what I'm trying to speak of. How many of you remember the first time you realized your phone was a smartphone? Okay? I remember that day. I remember the first time I got on the internet on my phone. I thought, I didn't know my phone would do that. It's wonderful. But it's also created lots of problems. The reason I use the term social media and media convergence, and media convergence is a term that came out prominently about 7 or 8 years ago, is the fact that this is an everything box. This is everything. Now, y'all, I'm sorry. To finish that up, what happened is I put together a 3-hour presentation and started presenting it all over. And when I came back to putting this together just a few years ago, when I first decided to do this early last year, I thought the real problem here is not the media itself. The real problem here is the content within that media. Now, back to what I was speaking about a while ago, and this is for the sake of you that aren't familiar with this, and part of this is for those of you that aren't familiar with social media and the technology. This phone will do anything. Anything my home computer will do. This is a Windows phone. It's got Word, PowerPoint. I could have put my PowerPoint presentation on this phone. That totally fascinates me. But nevertheless, that's where we are. And for that reason, it's not the technology, it's the content of that technology. And we're going to look at what's being done with that content in its good and bad. Today we're mostly looking at the bad side of that. But the real issue is morality. When I first started this, I was going to put together this just wonderful, great sermon about basic morality. I've been a preacher for a long time. I never realized how hard it was to write a sermon about basic morality, one that people would be willing to accept and listen to. So I didn't do that because it's hard. It's real hard because that's a difficult issue to speak of. But let's look at what we need to be speaking of. Let's look at the biblical context for this. Paul wrote, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give him thanks, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." The reason I look at that scripture is because I really believe that we know God is there. All of us do. By the creation that he made, us and the world and things about us. And what happens is, sometimes in this world, we get to where we're worshiping the creation, not things related to the Creator. I really believe that in many ways we worship this little contraption. We often don't admit it, but we do. And if not, we're totally preoccupied by it. About a month ago at the office, I work for a Church of Christ Children's Home. About a month ago at the office, our phone systems went out. Our landlines and our cell phones. Go 48 hours without a phone, all right? Or the internet, or anything related to that. It will drive you crazy, all right? Because we are that much dependent on it. Did you know the average person that has a cell phone checks it every 4 minutes? The average person that has a cell phone checks it every 4 minutes, all right? That's how much we're into that. So we're going to look at that. We're going to look at some of the dangers related to that. But I can't do that without at least, for the sake of the context, talk about the generations. Because I'm going to introduce you to a new generation that's just now being named. The youngest one, of course. But you need to know about the different generations because they react differently to the internet and to social media and so on. The greatest generation is the generation actually just older than my parents. All right? 1901 to 1926. They're mostly gone. There's some here. There's probably some right here with us today. The matures is my parents' generation. The greatest generation is what they typically refer to that group as. Different people call things different things. I'm in the middle of the baby boomers. I'm 2 months from being in the dead center of the baby boomers. I was born in October of 54. And January of 55 is the middle of the baby boomers. The Generation X is my oldest daughter. Born between 65 and 80. They're actually the smallest generation in many, many years. All right? That's significant. Then there's the millennials. And when I was talking about generations 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, all I talked about was the millennials. And Generation Y, they call them different things. They're now grown-ups. That's hard for some of us to comprehend, but they're now grown-ups. And the world is changing very rapidly because of them. Typically in very, very positive ways. And then there's the iGen, or the Generation Z, or the Boomlets. They're the ones we're just now beginning to talk about. Those are the ones that are anywhere from 7 to 20 years old. All right? And that's mostly what we're going to talk about, because that's the ones that you, as a parent or a grandparent, have the ability to affect, because they're your kids or your grandkids. So let's talk about these as we go a little bit farther. But most of the context for the day is speaking about that last generation. Now, I want y'all to hold me to something. What are we going to call them? Now, I'm trained in various versions of social media marketing and internet marketing and so on. So one of the things we bicker over all the time is within our conversations, what is this youngest generation? You know, they're calling them Zs for a while. Hold me to it. 10 years from now, we will be calling them the I generation. And of course, it stands for internet generation. Because the internet became, and all the things that we're talking about today became more easily available for their generation than any previous generation. So hold me to it. They will be calling them the I generation in 10 years. Now, let's talk about social media, though. And a lot of this is things that most of you that are younger than me know, and some of you that are older than me know this as well. And I feel a little bit apprehensive being in California because y'all are where all this stuff starts, all right? And I may have some of these things wrong. Now, if I've got something basically wrong, come tell me after services and I'll fix it for the next presentation. That has happened before when you get Snapchat and the other one mixed up, all right? Because I don't use all of them myself. But we're going to look at Facebook. It is now not the most common internet platform used by our children. Twitter, Snapchat, and blogs, and I left off YouTube, which is the most common used by our children now. We'll talk about that more in just a minute. But I want those of you that aren't familiar with this to at least know what they are. I sometimes call this presentation social media for seniors, and I don't mean seniors in high school, all right? Because you need to at least know what's out there. And everyone's going to come to me when this is over with, and they're going to say, Delton, why didn't you talk about this and this and this and this? And I'm going to say, give me about 10 hours, and I'll start covering this topic effectively. It's an extremely complex topic. Let's look at Facebook. I want you to notice how many Facebook subscribers there are. Y'all, there's an extra comma there, okay? All right? That is 1,860,000,000 subscribers to Facebook. One report says that half of everybody on Facebook gets on Facebook at least once a day. Now, y'all, that's a significant part of the world gets on Facebook. It has a social impact. It's changed the way we do almost everything. We communicate, we talk to one another, we do a whole lot through Facebook. Now, I often consider myself a Facebook Scrooge. I had 32 Facebook friends for a long time, all right? If you weren't blood kin to me or I was really seriously worried about offending you, you weren't my Facebook friend. I loosened up. I think I got 45 now, all right? Average is, if I remember correctly, average is 383, if I remember right, Facebook friends. Facebook is big, real big. It's how we communicate. Anybody want to guess who the most common person signing up for Facebook is today and has been for the last 10 years? Give me a demographic. Male or female? Female. Age? What's that? 65 is not too far off. Average age is a 53-year-old grandma. All right? Grandparents love Facebook. Okay? I have four grandchildren. I guarantee you I can find something new every single day about one of my grandchildren on Facebook. Or and everybody else's grandchildren on Facebook. But that's what it's good for. So Facebook is big. We share content there. We do lots of things on Facebook. I post about once a week. Usually it's about a trip like this, and that's all I do. But I've got some people that I have to sort of hide because I can only handle 30 or 40 things in one day from one person, all right? And we all know people like that as well. How many of you, I'm going to ask you this, please be honest, how many of you get on Facebook at all? Okay, that was probably 80% of the congregation. Okay, we admit that we like Facebook. Facebook is not always positive, though. What do we usually talk about on Facebook? What do I talk about? My next trip. The next wonderful thing that I'm doing. What about if you're a person who can't go on wonderful trips and do neat things, travel across the country? Okay? How's that going to make you feel? There are some real issues with depression related to the effects of Facebook. And we might need to think about that as Christians and those that are concerned about other people. About, hey, am I going to make somebody I know in the family feel bad because I'm bragging about what I'm doing? I'm not saying you have to leave it alone completely, but you need to take it into consideration. We spend most of our time on Facebook bragging, most of us, all right? And that's just sort of what Facebook is for. But remember, there are issues there. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with this, and I'm getting into a little bit more vague territory, because YouTube is the number one site for our children. And it's because of something they don't like to do. What is it that our children as a whole do not like to do? Somebody said it. I don't have my hearing aids in, by the way, but I heard you. Read. So what can you do on YouTube? You can watch a video on how to do it. True story. We have a travel trailer out in the woods over in East Texas. I put up a service pole. I didn't want to hire somebody to come wire that pole together. I watched 11 videos on YouTube on how to wire a 220 pole or 240 pole. I did it. It worked well, and I didn't burn anything up or blow anything up. All right? That's what YouTube is good for, and that's the reason our children like to use it. There's over 1 billion subscribers to YouTube. I needed the other day to make a sermon available to someone. Yeah, I put it on YouTube. If you want to watch this presentation at about 6 of the different places that I've been to, they're on YouTube, all right? I don't even know if they asked me or not, all right? But we're all over YouTube. YouTube is really, really big, and it is the most common place your children go to. Now, there's some problems with YouTube. Number one, it is the most popular for our teenagers, but number two, there is no pornography as such. And I'm sorry, y'all. In this presentation about social media, you can't not talk about pornography, all right? You can't, because it is the number one use of the internet right now. Did y'all catch that? It is the number one single use of the internet right now, above everything else besides a possible, if you go by numbers, Netflix is probably bigger, all right? But outside of that, it is the most, it is the number two in bandwidth. Netflix is number one. YouTube, there is no pornography there as such. They watch that pretty close. But what they can't watch, the people that run YouTube, they can't watch all those comments and other links that they attach. So you can go to pretty well any video on YouTube and start going down that list of all the different things people say good and bad about that video, and there will be bad places listed there. There will be bad links there. Why? Because when you got a billion people using it and a whole lot of those putting stuff on there regularly, nobody's got the time to watch all those links. So YouTube is in itself, on the surface, is generally pretty decent. But you got to watch those comments and other things that are there. YouTube is not innocent because of those other comments. So remember that when you're watching where your child is going. It's one thing to go to the YouTube video on how to wire a service pole, but it's something else to find out all the other places that it may send you. Instagram. I don't personally use Instagram. I think I have an account. This is the one I get mixed up with others. It's 600,000, and they're not shy at all about putting porn on Instagram. So if your child has an Instagram account, and they probably do, that means they have ready access to pornography. Twitter. Now, we all know about Twitter now because of our president likes Twitter, all right? And that sort of made Twitter even more famous than it was already. 313 million subscribers. It used to be exceedingly popular, even with the younger generation, but it's going downhill quick because of the generational thing. A lot of that is related to the president as well. Now used mostly by older adults, mostly used for conferences and things like that where you're trying to keep a group connected together for a given event. All right. I have a Twitter account. I very rarely use it. I mostly just send all my Facebook stuff automatically to Twitter, and that works okay. Snapchat. Now, this is for those of you that don't know anything about it. And if I get any of this wrong, you kids come tell me later, all right? Because I know you know this better than I do. There's 166,000 users that use it each day, okay? That doesn't total, it's not really a subscription as such, and so it's whether you use it or not. 30 million Snapchats a month, all right? What you can do is you can send photos or videos to someone, and in 10 seconds, they disappear. Why is that cool? The evidence, theoretically, is gone, all right? 30% of the, one survey said, as you probably read, 30% of youth users claim they use it because their parents don't use it, which means they're trying to do secret things. The average per day use is 18 times a day, and this says that 54% of all of American teens use Snapchat sometime during each day. That's a lot of usage. Now, Snapchat in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with it. It's what they're putting on it. We're going to talk about that content in just a minute. Now, I got a question for you. How many of you are Pinterest users? Raise your hands. Everybody keep them up a minute. I'm looking for the first male. All right. There's one. Okay. All right. Pinterest is 83% women. I have a Pinterest account, but I haven't figured out what it's good for yet. Okay. Obviously, it's very popular, 150 million users. It's mostly pictures and recipes and things of that sort is the impression I got. Am I right on that? Pictures and recipes is what it seems to be mostly used for. It's okay. And there's nothing inherently wrong with Pinterest, even though there is some questions about some of that content. LinkedIn is the one that, unless you're a business professional, you may not be familiar with. It is actually owned by Google now, which is now also called Alphabet. It's an employment site of sort. You either promote your job or you're looking for a job or you're trying to find somebody or just trying to keep up with what all your competitors are doing. It's a big site. 106 million subscribers. I use LinkedIn a lot. You sort of have to put your resume on LinkedIn just to get on LinkedIn, at least a version of your resume. So if you're looking for connections, business connections, that's what LinkedIn is good for. Now, I need to talk about a book that came out this past summer. This is actually the front page of it. My screen here is real blurry. I can't read any better there. I've been talking about this topic for a long time, about 20 years, related to how our kids interact with media of various sorts. Most of the time, up until this year, I was telling you what I thought, not what somebody had actually researched and proven. This book came out this past summer. It's been all over the news. I saw it in another article, new article, just this week, where they're quoting it again. The name of the book is called The Smartphone Generation, A Statistical Portrait. The constant presence of the internet, particularly social media, is changing the behavior and attitudes of today's teens. And I love her subtitle, IGN, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood, and What That Means for the Rest of Us. This is where the iGeneration comes in. And I'm glad somebody finally did the study. The lady that wrote this book took 10 different studies over a 40-year period to see what was happening. And this is not good or bad. It just shows you how much things have changed and how concerned and at least knowledgeable we need to be about social media. She had chart after chart after chart related to this, but I want you to notice some of the changes. And we wonder why our kids are the way they are. That line right in the middle there goes up and down. For every one of these slides, that was the day the iPhone came out. That was the day the iPhone came out. Now, I want you to notice what happens here. The first one, hanging out with their friends. Times per week that teenagers go out without their parents. In 2007, it was mostly leveled off, going down a little bit. The lower group is for the younger kids. The higher line is for the older kids. And look what it did. It plummeted. Now, why are our kids not going out with their friends? Anybody want to guess? Somebody was twiddling with their fingers back there. Yeah, that's it. That's it. You got it. If you can communicate just as much and have just as much sort of interaction with your kids while in your living room or your kitchen or your bedroom, why do you need to go out? All right? The world has changed. Now, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to talk about one slide that I didn't put in here. And this is from a whole lot of research. According to those that have studied this, compared to 30, 40 years ago, the average 17-year-old is acting like a 13-year-old. The average 21-year-old is acting like a 17-year-old. The average 24-year-old is acting like a 20-year-old. Y'all, this is across the board. All right? Our kids are maturing 4 years later than what they were. And that's not me talking. That is social scientist after social scientist after social scientist. And if you don't believe me, let's talk to the teachers in this group here. All right? Because you know it. All right? My daughter's a teacher, and she'll attest to the same thing. So, hanging out with friends. I'm going to have to hurry up a little bit. More likely, feel lonely. Y'all know there's been sort of a skyrocketing suicide situation in this country. All right? A lot of that is either directly or indirectly caused by the smartphone. Look how much that has skyrocketed indirectly because of the phone. Less likely to get enough sleep. That's gone up as well. Why? Because they're playing on their phones in their rooms. All right? And I love this one right here. When I was 16 years old, on my 16th birthday, I didn't care what I had to do. I was going down to the DPS office and getting my driver's license. All right? And I actually skipped school that afternoon in order to do that. All right? And so did everybody else. For my generation, 80% of us had a driver's license at the beginning of our senior year. Right now, 40% of the current generation have their driver's license at the end of their senior year. All right? They just assume mom and dad drive them. All right? Now, I'm going to go ahead, even though I'm running out of time, I'm going to have to cover what's caused all of that, just so in case you're curious. It all started with 9/11. All right? I'm going to be real blunt here. According to the social researchers, on 9/11, we as parents got scared, and we're afraid to let our kids do things. And we'd rather do it for them and keep them safe, keep them nurtured, keep them under that safety umbrella than letting them do things themselves. So a lot of things we're talking about are not the kids' fault, and some things we talk about aren't the cell phone's fault. A lot of it's because we as parents and grandparents are scared. And that's not good or bad, that's just what happened. So these issues about maturing later and not driving and all this other kind of stuff, that's a major cultural shift created initially by 9/11. They're dating less, okay? That makes sense to me, but they are. Part is because they're not driving as much. It's harder to date, all right? Let's talk about the most dangerous issues related to this. And I'm supposed to be through at what time, 35 after or 40?
40 after.
40 after. Okay, all right. I'm good. These are the biggest things, the most significant things you need to be concerned about related to what your child is into. We don't talk about sexting very much. What sexting is, it is sending, receiving, or forwarding sexual photos or suggestive messages through the email. It's dangerous, it's foolish, and it's illegal. I did this presentation over in the southern U.S., and I was called immediately the day they got the card. And what it was is the preacher's daughter, because of some other influences beyond her family, had gotten involved with this and bullying. And he knew the significance of this. They had made it past that problem. But don't think for a second that just because you're in the Church of Christ this morning that you're different. I'm going to give you a statistic that will totally irritate half of you. On everything that I'm talking about today, we within the Churches of Christ are statistically normal. We are statistically normal. We're not the exception, nor any other religious group. All right? Religious people are not exempt from the things we're talking about here. Why? Because we hit the same temptations as the rest of the world. Sexting is dangerous. The other problem with sexting is illegal. A teacher in Tennessee confiscated a phone, and when he confiscated that phone, he called the sheriff because it had photographs of a young lady in it, nude. He got arrested because he was in possession of child pornography. The laws are adjusting on that now, but that's how dangerous it is. Notice, I'm going to click forward a little bit. The peak age for sexting is 16 and 17, and they quit when they turn 18. Why do they quit? Because 18, they're going to go to jail, all right? And so they sort of know that. There's emotional consequences. It's just bad stuff. So be aware of what your children may or may not be doing. Predators, this is where sex trafficking starts, often on the internet. Be careful what your child is into. Watch what your child is into. Cyberbullying. I did this presentation at a church in Houston, and at the end of for a vacation Bible school. And at the end of that session, I asked everyone in the group, the 16 or 18 kids that I worked with and their mothers, to mark the five most important things that I talked about during that session and hand me that survey back. Every single young boy marked cyberbullying as number one. Not a single mother marked cyberbullying on the list at all. What does that tell me? It tells me that the moms are not aware of what their sons are dealing with. Cyberbullying is easy for people to do. Hey, I've got a picture of you that may not even be real, but I'm gonna put it all over the internet. You look stupid, or you're partially dressed, or whatever. If you don't do exactly what I tell you to do, it happens, and it happens a lot. And parents need to be aware of it. And you, as mothers, need to ask your sons and your daughters, "Are you dealing with this?" Because no 14-year-old boy is going to go to mom and say, "Mom, I'm being bullied by phone." It's not cool. But it happens. According to those boys in Houston, it happens a lot. So be aware of that. Other risky behaviors, taking pictures of yourselves that should not be on the internet, comparing yourselves to others, over-sexualized clothing, video attempts, and so on. I'm going to have to finish up pretty quickly now, but I want to speak just a moment about pornography. Our kids are becoming passive about this. While half of Americans over 25 believe it's wrong, if you talk to a 13 to 24-year-old, only about a third of them believe it's wrong. I find this statement right here appalling. But read what it says. This is according to the Barna study, people that do religious studies. They're serious, serious statisticians. Most teens and young adults view using porn as less wrong than not recycling. All right? To even put those in the same conversation bothers me. All right? But that's what they think. Don't think your child hasn't seen pornography. Your child has seen pornography. Why? If they're on the computer, Well, you can't avoid it. All right, it's there. It will pop up even if you don't want it. 7 out of 10 have accidentally come across it. 24% of teens in the nation that are 14 to 17 have been involved in sexting. Some of them have sent it on and so on. Now, it doesn't do any good to talk about this if I don't give you a little bit of ways to control it. The number one internet tool that you might have to control this is the kitchen table. Now, I mean that very seriously. If you've got a PC in your house, okay, put it on the kitchen table. It's the most public place in the house. Do not let your child have a PC in their bedroom. Okay, that's foolish. All right? You as adults, wives, don't let your husbands have a PC in their bedroom and vice versa. All right? It works in every direction. There are filters out there. NetNanny is probably the cheapest, one of the most effective. That's what we use at the children's home. There's dozens of them. You can go all the way from free to $500. All right? Just depends on what you want it to block. All right? But the main thing is to know what your child is into and to limit the amount of time that they can spend on their PC. If your child is on Facebook, you need to be one of their friends. You don't have to look like their friend. Call yourself something else and give yourself an avatar. All right? But be on their Facebook account. At the children's home, we won't allow any of our kids not to have one of us as adults on their Facebook account. Pay attention to where your child is going. Go to the places they go. Check their content. Let them know you're watching. Because the number one thing that's going to prohibit them from going to places that you don't want them to go is the fact that you're looking to see where they're going. You have that responsibility as an adult. Use the tools that you have available. I used to say that children under 13 couldn't be on Facebook. They changed that about a month ago. All right. Now children can have their own Facebook account with you having great controls. Know their passwords. Don't ever let your child tell you that their constitutional right to privacy says you can't have their password. All right? Y'all, I've heard that hundreds of times. Okay? It doesn't work. So do that. Okay. All this is called media convergence. We'll talk a little bit more about this part later today. I'm talking about some more helpful hints. And then we'll be talking about television and the social side of this in this slide here this afternoon at 6 o'clock. The sermon that I have in just a moment will be about how to be a good Christian family.
Okay? Yep.
I thought that was the second one.
Was that the first?
That was the first? Yeah. If I've got 5 minutes, I can cover this other part over here. I was rushing unnecessarily. This is a good place to stop. For those of you that are educators, you may remember that Piaget came out with some theories of educational development. I'm not sure what he called it. Very, very instrumental in affecting education for many, many years, still considered important. Lawrence Kohlberg came back and took that information and came back and adjusted it for stages of moral development. And I'm about to get to the topic sentence of all of this in just a moment. And what he said is this is the way our kids grow up. When they're little, they're egocentric. That means all they're concerned about is how wet, dirty, or hungry they are. And that's all they care about. And then when they grow up a little bit, they learn that, hey, if I put my hand on the hot stove, I'm going to get hurt. Or if I do that, mom or dad are going to punish me. Or if I do that, I'm going to get a hug from mom or dad or grandma. All right? Reward and punishment. When they get to be about 5, usually, they go into what makes me and my friends happy. I think of the little kids doing things together, the boys doing things outside, or the girls doing their thing as well. That's when they start clustering together. And finally, usually about the time they get to junior high, they get to the point where their actions are determined by how far can I go and still stay out of trouble. And that's common. Think about a typical seventh grader or eighth grader. It is how far can I go and not get in trouble. Now, hopefully, we all want our children to go to the next two levels. These are principled or Christian ideals. What would a moral thinking person do? Call it the golden rule if you want to. Or the right is a conscious decision of personal ethics that appeal to logic, morality, and consistency. Kohlberg put this together. Then over the years, and Kohlberg wrote this a long time ago, and over the years, the social scientists have studied this, and they studied it, and they studied it, to see how well it holds up. And even though it is not studied a whole lot anymore, just because there's other newer, more cooler theories that have taken the place of it, this is what they came up with. Well, back up a second. How many of you know people that have never moved past number four? Okay, all right. We all know people that have never moved past number four. They may be 50 years old and they've never moved past number four, all right? They run their life according to how far can I go and stay out of trouble. This is what the social scientists have said, and they weren't necessarily Christians. They said, if your child ever moves from number four to number five, it will be through the influence of the primary adult figure in that child's life. If your child ever moves from number four to number five, it will be through the primary adult figure in your child's life. It's not necessarily mom or dad. It could be the youth minister. It could be a teacher. It could be grandma. It could be grandpa. It could be anybody. Whoever that kid most respects, and what they teach them. Now, the reason I bring this up is because everything that we're talking about today, I'm trying to tell you, you got to be proactive. You can't just sit and watch, let it happen. Because I could quote statistic after statistic after statistic that shows what happens if you do nothing. And nothing's not going to work. Believe me, your kids are paying attention to what you're teaching them, even though, and I say this a whole lot in my television session, even though they don't act like they care. My kids can quote everything I ever said. All right? Don't forget that. Remember, you got to be proactive. You got to do it. You can't just not do anything and hope it'll work out okay, because it won't. I'm going to conclude with that. I'm going to say a prayer, then I'll be through. Thank you for your attention this morning. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for the Lord's Day. Thank you for the opportunity we have to get together and look at ways that we can work with families and work with our children and help to make the world a better place by starting in our home. Pray that you'll give us strength and guidance through prayer, a study of your word. We need your help. We need it desperately. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.